Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Small Council Radio. On tonight's episode, we're going to be finally going over the Baratheons for the 2021 update. This will be a one of three-part show where, we're going to be going, kind of taking a deep dive into the Baratheon faction. So because the Baratheons are such large of a faction, when you take into consideration, you got Renly's side and Stannis' side, and really realizing until kind of screenshotting a lot of this stuff for the show, I think they had the least amount shown on the Visions. If I'm correct, they only had like two units, one NCU, one attachment, and two commanders shown. So with that said, all three episodes I think are going to be kind of jam-packed with content. So because of that, we're going to do our best to we might have to stop somewhere kind of in between. So tonight we're going to try all the units and all the NCUs, but we might have to stop somewhere in the middle of the NCUs, but we'll see how fast we can kind of get through some of these. And then if we're lucky and somehow we can get through it really quick, we'll maybe start in on some of the attachments, but, so we'll kind of more so play it by ear than usual, just to make sure that we can fit all the content in three episodes. With that said, I want to thank my co-hosts so much for coming on tonight. We have with us Justin and Spencer. Thank you guys for coming on.
No problem.
Yep.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
You're breaking up, Spencer. Justin, how about you?
I'm talking.
I can hear Justin.
Yeah, I'm speaking.
You can hear me just fine?
Yeah, I can hear Spencer.
All right, so sounds like their audio is having a little bit of difficulty, but we'll get back to them in a second there. So first off, we're just going to kind of jump into the units. First unit that we're going to talk about is the Dragonstone Noble. Just give me a second to pull him up here. The Dragonstone Noble is interesting. I definitely like kind of what they've done with him. Not a whole lot has changed, if I recall. Let's see. All right, so for the Dragonstone Noble, we have, he is, I want to say, I really should look up the point cost a little bit better here. They always kind of throw me for a loop. So the Dragonstone Noble, so he's 4 points. We're looking at 4-inch movement, a 3-up to hit with 3 dice, 2-up save, and a 3-up morale. He has the order Sentinel. After another friendly unit in long range is attacked, this unit performs one charge or maneuver action. If charging, it must target the attacker. He has the innate ability of a solo rider, which gives him 3 wounds, and at the start of his activation, he can perform one maneuver or retreat action. And he also has the Noble's Wrath, giving him sundering and +2 hits for each wound this unit has suffered. So, granted, it's only 3 wounds, so anything doing auto wounds is really going to kind of try to capitalize and get rid of him fast, but that 2-up save means that it's going to be a lot tougher than most people think if you're just going the normal route of throwing some dice at him. And then you run the risk of kind of like the Giants, where if you leave him lingering with only 1 wound, now he's throwing 3 hits on 3-up with 4 auto hits, all of it being sundering. So he could be kind of, a cruise missile, especially if you run him in such a way where, he you can self-deal yourself some damage to ensure that that happens. So, all right, let's see here. Justin,
can you hear me now?
Yep, sound good there. How about you, Spencer?
Can you hear me?
Yep. All right, awesome. Glad that's fixed. I don't know what happened there. That was kind of odd. It could have even been my internet. I don't know. But fortunately, it's all fixed. So we'll start off with you, Justin. What's kind of your take here on the Dragonstone Noble?
The first thing that really stands out to me is the fact that he can do a free retreat action when he activates, which is, as far as I'm aware, unique to him, right? Like nobody else can.
I believe Jorah has it as well. Mormont.
Oh, the solo?
Yeah.
I that makes sense.
I think
That's
he
cool.
does. I'm not 100% about that one.
So it gives solos a little, these two solos, it definitely gives them a little unique advantage that can be very helpful to get those rerolls. Because hitting on threes is great, but it's far from guaranteed. Rerolls really help seal a deal, and especially if you're retreating, there's a good chance you took a wound or two, so you can get some more damage. For 4 points, I think, I don't know, I don't like the idea myself. Like, I'm not saying it's bad, I'm not saying it's good, like, I'm completely negating that part, but I don't like having something that has 3 wounds, because I'm going to fail all my armor saves, and I'm going to cry about it. It's just how it's going to go. I'm going to take 3 2-up armor saves and die. It's going to be great. But that being said, I like the model a lot, and I like the idea of him. Something cheap that's at 4 points in case, like, you've got an elite army and you've already got attachments on stuff and you just have this weird point value, it can help fill the role. And there could be times where this is going to be very valuable. So I like him. I think he's pretty appropriate, probably. We'll see. A lot of auto wound things are far and few between now, so that's also good.
Yeah, plus even maybe, not even just auto wounds, but even things that are just auto hits, you throw enough of those at him, you know, you might not kill him in the first try, but do it 3 times, you know, like the castle, like if you plop him on a objective for honed and ready and, you know, just keep replacing the ability or the zone to keep shooting him with arrows. You know, he's bound to, you know, fail like one every roll, especially if you can combine it with some vulnerable tokens. You know, you could kill him pretty quickly. Though I guess, you know, you probably would only put him on there if, you know, you really had to. But that 2-up save, you know, that is risky. Like, risky in the sense that, you know, it's kind of a toss-up, you know, whether or not, you know, it's a 2-up. So you could just be passing all those auto-hits just left and right, or, you know, he could die, you know, kind of quickly. Spencer, what do you think?
So I look at him and I go, he's situationally good. If you put him in the right situation, he's great. I have personally used the Melisandre to auto do 2 wounds to myself on a turn that I planned to actually fight, and I really messed up people. When you're, okay, I'm going to charge in, do 4 auto hits because I meld for 2 wounds to myself, and then I'm going to really hurt you. So I have used stuff there. It's one thing the Baratheons kind of have is they have Stannis loyalty, at least, and that since he's Stannis loyalty, he has to. There are things in Stannis loyalty that do auto wounds, so you can kind of power him up when you want to if you use him properly, which for me has been try and wait, maybe have him sit on objectives, but kind of wait for an opening has been the success. I struggle when I see 2 of these in a list, like when I've tried, but they're really good for 4 points. Make no mistake, I've seen them tank an entire Night's Watch crossbow shot without dying for somehow, and they can be very good. They are still only 4 points. They're fragile. Protect them as best you can, I would suggest. But yeah, they're actually a very nice 4-point solo unit.
Yeah, and another thing, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it, but he does, like you were saying, he has a couple really strong, kind of goofy combos, like him with Mel and what's his name? Davos, running him with Davos, so that you can use what's it called, parlay. You know, when a friendly unit activates, this unit cannot perform actions this turn. Target one enemy in short range. It activates, but does not perform any actions. If it targets, obviously it's not Davos's unit, so you won't get the other part of it. But I mean, you could take this 4-point investment and you know, shoot it past the person's line of sight, and then the next round, you know, activate them right away to then activate their big, you know, expensive unit to, you know, really get the upper hand on that transaction.
If I can jump in for a sec.
Yeah.
I would like to point out you also do get your free maneuver before you try to do that tactic for Davos, because it is when you activate, and it is a free action to do your maneuver, so you do get kind of 4 inches, so you kind of have a 10-inch threat range with them to do that. I will also say I've kind of done this tactic with them where you do maybe take a turn beforehand if you're seeing the battlefield proper, you know, as best as you can, obviously. And I have taken maybe a turn two and been like, you know what, I'm just going to maneuver and march them into the side of an enemy because I have Sentinel. So if you want to attack something of mine, I now can get a free charge on you. It is very viable options you can do with this unit.
And for those that were thinking about that interaction, so because parlay is when you activate and so is your free maneuver, you'll get to choose the order. So you would simply, when you activate, do your free maneuver, then throw parlay down and be like, okay, I'm playing this when I'm, you know, in the same time window of the free maneuver to be able to do that. But yeah, like you were saying, you can get to the flank of something with your movement and now force your opponent to have to pivot towards you, potentially exposing their flank, just to then throw a parlay next round. And then now they can't perform any actions. So you can't give them free actions. You can't do anything.
You can give them free actions with parlay. Parlay is just you put an activation token on them, so they lose their activation, but they can still do free actions.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I just saw at the end it says does not perform any actions. But yeah, it says it activates but does not perform any actions. So yeah, I see where it says that now.
That'd be busted otherwise.
Yeah.
Here's four and a half man for free. Or for a card.
A Texas card, yeah. But yeah, either way, I just wanted to mention that interaction because we're probably not going to get the commanders until part three of the series. But yeah, definitely a great interaction with him, and, you know, kind of a little upside to bringing Davos, as we'll get to when we talk about commanders. Davos is a little on the lower side for commanders, but he has some pretty cool, tricky things you can do with him, that being one of them. Next up, we have we'll go with the Baratheon Wardens. They are a 5-point unit, 4-up move. They're 4-up to hit with 6-5-4, 3-up armor save, 6-up morale. They have Warhammer, which is if the defender rolls any ones on their defense dice, after this attack is completed, they become weakened. And then they have Counter-Strike. Each time this unit is attacked with a melee attack, for each miss, the attacker suffers one hit. So, in my opinion, these guys got way better than they were before. I mean, oddly enough, I find it just kind of weird that they have Counter-Strike. It just doesn't seem like, I don't know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, these guys are in, you know, about as armored as you can be in this game. And and, you know, they have an ability that's supposed to be for someone who's, like, fast moving or fast reaction, you know, you're counter-striking your opponent. It just kind of feels off to me. I don't know. Thematically, I liked their old abilities better. But as I had said, I think they're way better than they were. So it's kind of a lateral change if you factor, like, what, in my opinion, makes sense along with, you know, how effective they are. But these guys are, I think, point for point, you can make an argument that they're the best 5-point unit in the game across any faction, because Counter-Strike is just so powerful, especially with things, a lot of things going from 3-up to hit to 4-up to hit. Justin, what do you think of the Wardens here?
So I can wholeheartedly agree that they definitely seem to be better, and that I don't understand Counter-Strike, but I'm cool with it. I like this unit a lot, both aesthetically and on the tabletop. I feel like an argument against them being the best is going to be that you can ignore them, but you can only ignore a unit so much until you do have to deal with it. And this is a unit that you're going to see a lot of, so it's kind of hard to ignore. You know, it's not like an elite unit that's slow. It's chaff that's slow. So they're going to be plentiful, and they're going to be in your face at some point. There's probably no avoiding unless you're Speedboat Targaryens. I like them a lot. I think they work really well. They barely lost any offensive power. They literally just lost, what, one dice to everyone else's one to hit. So it's pretty significant. I'm good with these guys. They're my boys.
Yeah, and, you know, it's crazy, though, and we'll, again, get to kind of talk about this combo a bit later when we get to the NCUs, but, you know, the fact you can run Alistair, Florent, and Peter Baelish and basically guarantee yourself a zone, any one zone you want the entire game, and, you know, you run a bunch of, like, Stormcrow lieutenants in these guys, you know, when you control the wealth, you will have Sundering and always a highest attack die. So you're looking at, you know, 666 across the board, you know, with hitting on, I mean, it's only hitting on fours, but I mean, it's got Sundering and you're only paying 6 points for it. You're really, you know, you're turning this unit into a very versatile unit that, you know, you can't just ignore. I know you're only probably going to hit with 3 dice on average without rerolls, and, you know, you're probably going to fail 2 of those depending on your armor. But then, you know, they're really going to start to chip away, whereas I don't think they would have, you know, otherwise. Or you can just run them to 5 points and just kind of sit them on objectives and wait for your opponent to try to come to you. Either way, I think these guys are amazing at 5 points. Spencer, what do you think about these guys?
So I definitely agree they got better. And the scary thing is I think they were already in contention for one of the best 5-point units, even in 1.6. They got much better. I don't know if they are the best 5 points, but I definitely think they're a top 3 for 5 points in the game right now. They do quite a bit. I have several lists where this is my command bunker, my commander's bunker, just because it's like it's so durable. An opponent's not going to chew through this unit in one activation. They're going to need multiple. I know the game moved away from one-shotting units anyway. This unit definitely is going to take at least 2 from an elite unit, if not more, to go down. The Counter-Strike gives some nice chip damage to supplement their mediocre, I guess, attack profile for it. But it's still solid enough. You still go, hey, if my opponent rolls any ones, they're going to become weakened for when I attack. So it goes with Counter-Strike very nicely. A very good all-around unit.
Yeah, and I know as me and you have kind of discussed, you know, and this isn't a hard and fast rule, like you have to do it, but we've come to kind of realize that in a lot of missions and a lot of scenarios, having your commander just be in a cheap 5-point unit that's super survivable is you know, it really pays off, because now in those missions where you have five objectives, you stick them on one of the, you know, one of the ones in the corner on your side. You know, in your case, like if you're running your commander and these wardens, you just kind of plop them over on this objective, and you know, okay, I've only invested 5 points. Some armies, you know, you could run like Poor Fellows and do it for Lannisters. But okay, I've invested 4 points, and now every round, two victory points, and you're, you know, you send the brunt of your, like the full force of your power of your list off to deal damage and contest objectives and, you know, kill things while you're just kind of sitting here with this bunker of a commander unit getting you all these points. And that kind of lends to, I think, a lot of the Baratheon commanders, too, that also kind of lend to that defensive play style. Or not necessarily play style, like the whole faction or army list has to play that way. But, I mean, they have a lot of awesome defensive abilities that will be granted to their unit. Either whether it be Hardened or Iron Resolve or something like that. But I think, yeah, these guys are great as a commander bunker, a cheap 5-point investment, so that way you don't have to risk your commander by throwing him into the fray, while, you know, like I said, just kind of sit him on an objective, get those points. Next up we have, we can talk about the Champions of the Stag. So they are 8 points. They have a movement of 4. They hit on 3s with 7-5. Their defense is a 2-up save with a 6-up morale. They have the innate ability for cavalry, which gives them the 3 wounds per model, and then at the start of their activation, they get a free maneuver. And then they have Champion's Wrath that gives them critical blow, and enemies successfully charged become weakened. So way better than their 10-point version, in my opinion. Obviously, they're weaker than their 10-point, but for obvious reasons. I mean, that's a 2-point drop. I mean, you can't really expect them to stay the same or, like, similar. But with that said, I think, you know, a lot of people have made the comparison with these guys and Flaydmen. I think, yes, on the overall scale and everything, you know, Flaydmen are better. But I think the Champions are just good enough in certain areas that, depending on your list, it's, you know, you're definitely going to want to take the Champions over Flaydmen. And I would say more often than not, it's probably going to be, you know, if you have a lot of healing and you're more so like Renly side, you're going to want to take the Champions of the Stag, because healing the 2-up save unit, any amount of wounds is, you know, a big deal. Whereas if you're running Stannis side, Flaydmen are probably going to be your go-to, just, you know, to kind of play into that vicious, you got the intimidating presence, and you kind of play into that whole scheme, and they're going to have less, you know, less healing, usually. Though, as we'll kind of get into, Renly side kind of lost a handful of its healing, so there really isn't that much anymore, but... So yeah, I think these guys are a great 8-point unit. I think just sometimes they seem a little overshadowed because of Flaydmen's utility. Spencer, we'll start with you this time. What's your opinion here on the Champions?
So my experience with them in the 2021 date is mixed. I've had some games where they, 'cause my personal look when I look at them is they're meant to be almost a roadblock unit of I am going to use them to block something of yours that I do not like, and they hopefully are durable enough to withstand it for a while and maybe tie you up from even getting contesting an objective. That's how I've seen them. The problem I have with them is morale. Unfortunately, I have to bring it up. I know you can go, well, all the heavy cav, except for Tully cav, have a 6-up morale anyway. This is the role I've envisioned for them, so maybe I'm just playing them differently or wrong. I've had the problem just of, you poke me for 1 damage, but it was a vicious hit, and now I'm taking D3 more wounds, and that's, I quickly fall apart because I don't have the healing. I've had mixed reviews, like I said, mixed games. I have had games where they're both bunkering and when I get out timely Hours of the Fury, they hit hard. They can hit hard with Hours of the Fury. But I envision that the plan for them was to be, this is the heavy cavalry of the game. It is meant to endure. And I find their six up morale to be constraining for that end. However, again, I could just be not playing them as they were intended. I could be just having it completely wrong. That was just my interpretation. Overall, they could be a good unit. It kind of depends on what you're fighting. Are you fighting Greyjoys who have weak armor and you're like, okay, on the charge, I actually could really hurt a unit? Or are you facing another three-up armor, you know, group that just doesn't care? It's very, I feel, matchup dependent is how they go.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely a great point that if you're facing something that's like super heavy panic damage, the two-up save is not really going to save them a lot. You know, they're, you know, like you said, poke them for one, and especially if you're Lannisters and you can really push in a lot of that extra panic damage, you could really, you know, hurt these guys bad and bypass their armor. Justin, thoughts, especially when, you know, a lot of people are comparing them to Flayed Men, which I know you have a lot of experience with.
So, like, even Flayed Men just pump out significantly more damage because of the Vicious, and they have crit when they need crit. And then Intimidating Presence is just almost always going to be that extra one straight wound that it's going to pump out for you. One thing I would... Well, it's not really pointing out, but when you compare a 2-up save to a 3-up save, that's much more significant than comparing a 3-up save to a 4-up or a 4-up to a 5-up, because it's 100% more chances of failing at a 3-up save. So it's still 17% more, but you're doubling the wounds. And so what Spencer said about the roadblock is, I mean, obviously that's the design behind these guys, right? Like, sustained combat. Flayed Men get crit on the charge. These guys get crit all the time. A weakened token helps them survive, but yeah, definitely panic is going to be what kills these guys. A 6 by no means is bad, but that also means when you fight, as you guys said, those panic armies, more often than not, significantly so, you're going to fail. Even if you're only being attacked by a vicious guy, your odds are more likely that you'll fail than pass. And then if you add Intimidating Presence, Hear Me Roar, anything like that, then it's just compounding it. I wish that there were more Baratheon counters to, like, the panic, so you could throw these against some panic-based unit with a card in your hand knowing that you can survive the panic or something like that. Like, I've been doing that a lot in neutrals when I have the auto pass if you're near your commander card. I'll purposely toss myself into combat with a Lannister Guardman because I don't care about Lannister Supremacy for that round or whatever. But as far as I'm aware, Spencer, Dave, I don't really think Baratheons have anything to negate panic damage or stop it from failing.
They have one commander of Stannis, not the rightful heir, one true king. He has Iron Resolve. It won't help the Champions of the Stag, but also we have the unfortunate Stag Knight Noble, who is, we're not going to get into attachments, but he's not that optimal, I think, for them. That's about it for panic. The other thing I would like to kind of point out, in my opinion, when I think of Baratheon, I feel like they would have anti-panic tech, but this is more of a personal idea.
Well, yeah, they're brave and strong.
Yeah, they're kind of the ones that are like, yeah, we don't run. We go until you kill us.
They're badgers.
Yeah. That's why they're Ars the Fury.
Well, but, don't forget about Oath of Duty. -1 to panic damage is
But you have to lose a unit before that activates, which is like, well, I lost the unit. And
hopefully you're not losing them first, though.
But you could.
Oh, I have plenty of times. Oath of Duty, and that's the unit that dies first. Really?
One thing I would highly recommend for, like, newer players is It can be very, very tempting to take cavalry and overextend. More so than any other cavalry, this one is one you can't afford to overextend, I think.
Yeah, I would have to kind of agree there. You know, any newer players playing, you know, I would say any cavalry, no matter what, no matter how defensive and crazy strong they are, treat them as a support unit. Don't treat them as your hammer, you know, to just run in there and start, you know, breaking things up, because, you know, it's kind of like a coin flip. You know, either you're going to actually do it, or you're going to get bogged in there somehow, and there's going to be some healing, or they're just going to, you know, have a freakishly good defensive roll, and then now you're stuck in there, and then they play some maneuver card, and now you're, like, attacked on two different sides, and, you know, especially if they can get, like, a flank charge with the Sundering unit, and now they're really going to start taking a lot of hurt. So I would say, you know,
Targaryens, obviously, treat them like what they are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their defensiveness isn't all that great, so it's you kind of already expect that they're going to take a little damage on the return.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially if you add some attachments in there, 8-plus point unit, we'll say, of cavalry, these heavy cav, you know, still try to treat them like a support unit, or else, you know, or even, I guess if you do throw them in there, just try to throw them in maybe on a flank, so that to minimize the amount of damage or danger that they can be put in. But yeah, overall, I love these guys. I absolutely love their models. They're amazing looking models. I know some have watched Sunday Slaughter's Battle Report that I did with Chris when he was out in this area. I spent like 12 straight hours painting a unit of these guys so that they could be painted for the Battle Report, just because how amazing they look. But with that said, we can kind of jump into the next unit here. Let's talk about Rose Knights. So Rose Knights are 7 points. They have a 4-inch move, a 3-up to hit with 7-5-4, a 3-up defense, and 6-up morale. They have
perseverance.
I don't know if I... Perseverance, there you go. I was trying to read like three different words there. Perseverance and Valor. Each time this unit performs a melee attack before rolling attack dice, it restores one wound. And they also have Deadly Bloom. Each time this unit restores wounds, one target enemy it is engaged with, they suffer one wound. So I think they did an awesome job of changing these guys to be way less oppressive. They took away, I believe Dauntless is what they took away. So it was every time they pass morale tests, they heal. So, which the nice part is you could still give it to them. They have an attachment to give it to them, a generic one for 1 point, and give them ignoring, dangerous, hindering, and rough. And then you can still run, I believe, Loras in them to give them Dauntless, Loras Commander. So that you can still get your 1.6 Rose Knights, but now you're just going to have to either have your commander in it, Loras Commander, or run them at 8 points with the benefit of ignoring all those terrain keywords. And so I kind of like that compromise that Simon did there. I like that they took away a big part of the combo wheel that was just making them heal and deal so much, combined with the fact that they did take away a handful of the healing overall within the faction. But there still is plenty of healing that you can do. And like I said, run these guys at 8 points, and you can still get that crazy combo that I'm sure everybody loves. Now, as a lot of people on TTS would say, I mean, you can just ignore them most of the time. Obviously, there are some lists out there that people have run where they run like three of these units, or at least 1.6, you know, when they had the Dauntless, that it was, you couldn't really ignore it. And, you know, like I said, it could be pretty oppressive where, when, you know, you just can't deal enough damage, and they're just simply killing you just by healing, let alone whatever attack dice they roll. So I like where these guys are at personally. I think you're probably not going to run more than one anymore. So a lot of people might not be happy with that. And I can't really blame them. You know, I own three units of these guys, and I do really love how they look. So the fact that I can't really see myself running more than one unit of them, does, you know, it does kind of stink a little bit. That's not to say that you can't run some competitive lists, with more than one. It's just, I think on average, these guys are going to be more of either a command bunker for the Renly side, because this unit is a Renly loyalty, unit. Or, you know, like I said, even running them 8 points with that, the attachment, I forget what it's called. I think it's the Thorn Watch Sentinel, is still, I think, really good. I know Spencer probably kind of has a bit of a different opinion on this one. So I'll go to you next, Spencer. What's kind of your take on the Rose Knights here?
So I agree they're less oppressive now by losing Dauntless. That's overall a good thing. Where I differ is I feel this is a unit that can cause negative play for opponents. I feel like the you know, Deadly Bloom, unfortunately, in my opinion at least, is it punishes my opponent for playing the game by wanting to attack this unit, which, like you said, then the kind of tactic becomes, well, if I ignore it, I don't really have to deal with that. And if you only have one of them, it actually is pretty easy to ignore. I'm not a fan of Deadly Bloom. As it is, though, since they have it, it is nice. I actually could see running two of them just to try and make it hard for my opponent to ignore it. Because that is kind of a thing. If your opponent is just... I've had games where my opponent successfully ignores the one I have. And then I'm just like, well, why didn't I just take a Warden unit for 2 points cheaper? And then I've also had games where my opponent keeps attacking, is only doing chip damage, I'm healing it back, and they're starting to get frustrated because they're just taking auto wounds back. So there is ways that it is successful. I just don't like the negative experience that either I or my opponent tend to have in return. As is, they are a good unit. They're, like David said, they're a good bunker unit for a commander. They're not easy to take down. So yeah, you're gonna definitely get points. I like them personally with Eldin because Eldin's battle endurance takes them from a defensive unit to an all-round good unit. Loras obviously is a good choice for him, which makes sense. He gives them Dauntless again. You can do things with them. I just am not a fan of the Deadly Bloom personally.
Yeah, and I think like you're comparing the Wardens here, and I think that's a good point that comparing them, it kind of sucks in the sense that, you know, Wardens are, like we said, arguably top 3 5-point unit in the game, whereas these guys are just barely 7 points. Like, they're a fair 7-point unit, but they're really low on that 7-point totem pole, in my opinion. And with that said, that doesn't leave a lot of gap, you know, because you're paying that 2 extra points for essentially +1 to hit and one more die on full ranks. And then you're really just kind of swapping abilities, you know, that counter strike and the weakening your opponent on a one for the healing and dealing abilities. So You know, I can't blame people that compare the two and then just go, like you said, why not just run Wardens? And that's just because of how little the gap kind of is. Like I said, you're taking one of the best 5 points, in my opinion, in the game and comparing it to just a decent, you know, 7-point unit. So personally, I would like to see Deadly Bloom go away, like you said, because the problem isn't necessarily about the healing. It's about, you know, you're trading that many wounds. You know, if you heal one, deal one, that's a 2-point or a 2-wound swing between the unit. So I'd rather just see them get Dauntless back and take away Deadly Bloom and now just compound that healing to make sure that they stay in that, you know, higher attack bracket.
I know Justin hasn't spoken yet, but if you don't mind me cutting in real quick.
He might.
Are you asking me? No, I don't mind.
I know. You're such a...
Ask?
But, yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't mind them getting Dauntless back. I would say they need something else, though, with it, because Deadly Bloom is a very powerful ability, and it is the reason to take them. But even getting away from, like, wish listing, it's just, it's a difficult unit, in my opinion, to use well. It's slow. It doesn't have great morale, so it's another unit that I've seen get, like, my opponent doesn't attack it. They just panic it to death so that I'm not healing, I'm not dealing. It doesn't do a whole lot of damage with that attack profile for 7 points. There's better options. And the other thing I wanted to point out is, like David said, you can put the Thornwatch Sentinel in there and give him back the Dauntless and ignore. You're going to notice a problem that I have in general with Baratheon list building. We're not going to talk about him, I don't think, tonight, and that is the Stag Knights. That is might be one of the best 8-point units in the game. And so if you make anything go to 7 or to 8 points, a 7-point unit, put an attachment in it to make it to 8 points, you now have to question, is this going to do a different role than a Stag Knight, or is this going to be better than a Stag Knight? And most of the time I go, if it's not a different role, it's not going to do better than a Stag Knight.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, the Stag Knights are just good at essentially everything, you know, that 4-up save, 5-up morale, but then having Relentless, you know, and like you said, we're not going to talk about them just because nothing
not
has changed, or Resilience, sorry, yeah, Resilience, and like you said, we're not going to talk about them just because they were, or we won't deep dive into them just because they were in the Visions and they haven't changed as far as we know. Yeah, I mean, that's another great point that we've talked about in the past, that, you know, if you have a 7-point unit, putting even a 1-point attachment, is that unit better than a Stag Knight? And the answer is almost always a no, just because of how good they made Stag Knights. So with that said, they've made Baratheons with arguably one of the best 5-point and one of the best 8-point units in the game. And now it really constrains everything in between. You know, all those 6-point and 7-point units are now really, you know, it's hard to justify attachments in them. Not necessarily so much on the 6-point unit as far as putting an attachment, but a 6-point unit without an attachment. You know, for example, I'd rather just run Wardens with a Lieutenant if I know I can get that money bag most of the game over a Sentinel unit. I know the Sentinels have that, you know, the Sentinel order, but, I mean, the Wardens are just so much more defensible and now hit almost as hard. You know, they just are losing, like, one attack die or something. So, and for the same point cost and extra abilities. But yeah, so I think that's kind of where it comes down to with the whole point issue with the Baratheons. So Justin, finally, getting to you. I know saving the best for last year. What's kind of your thoughts here about the Rose Knights?
I don't know. Is there anything left to talk about?
There is.
One specific thing. I've always loved this unit. I think it's awesome. I love the idea behind it. This is how I like to play. It's not usually a way that works well. But this unit, Spencer kind of alluded to it, this unit's really good. against new players and exceptionally bad against anyone who isn't a new player. Generally, obviously, this is generally speaking. They can still do good if your opponent decides to, I don't think that they're going to get through them just by straight up attacking them or something, or without like some kind of Hail Mary. But every time I've seen these guys on like a top table or against a veteran player who understands their value, they do nothing. They do nothing. They get ignored, or like Spencer said, seven dice with nothing else just doesn't cut it. If anything, you're throwing a chaff unit into them just to keep them busy, because you're not going to waste your time.
Yeah. Most five-point units could take forever to kill this, or for them to kill.
Or just, yeah, exactly. It'll take a turn or two or three, and if it takes three turns, then the game's definitely over if you've wasted your commander against, I don't know, cutthroats. That'd be embarrassing.
Sad, but probably mathematically how it goes.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And so, yeah, this unit just, it doesn't realistically in my eyes, which is sad. It's definitely one of my favorite units of the game. And aesthetically, obviously, I pretty much like everything in the Baratheon army aesthetically. Not the biggest fan of the R'hllor's Faithful aesthetically. But, yeah, Rose Knights, I don't know. Like, they can't really push this. The theme of them just isn't something that's going to work with a veteran player. That's just the gist of it.
Yeah, and they definitely have a difficult spot for sure. I think the only, like, for sure amazing, like, combo, in my opinion, is Loras in them, just giving that deadly bloom back for free, and now you have expert duelist. Now, you know, they're super scary in that regard. You know, for any unit that has an attachment in them. You know, otherwise, it is kind of, you know, you ask yourself, you know, you really want to put an attachment in them, and if you do, then just Stagnites. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if these guys get changed, but I don't think they will.
I want to point out again, Eldin for battle endurance on them is actually really darn good, too, and it makes them offensive.
It doesn't fix their problem nearly as much. Oh, you mean card battle endurance.
But yeah,
their problem
still endurance.
Is they're not doing good against what they need to do good against. They can hold the line well, though. I'll give them that, just like everything in the breath.
Just like a warden unit?
Oh.
Exactly.
All right, so next up, we're going to get to the R'hllor units. We got Queensmen, Kingsmen, Lightbringers, and the Faithful. I'm going to start with the kind of, I would say, the mainstay for the R'hllor faction, or the R'hllor sub-faction. We get the R'hllor Faithful, now 6 points. They're a 5-move. They hit on fours with 7-6-4, a 5-up defense, 4-up morale. And then they have this huge ability that takes up the whole other side of the card, which is Heart of Fire, their faith token ability. This unit begins the game with 1 faith token. Each time it passes a morale test, it gains 1 faith token. Faith tokens may be expended to do the following. When an enemy engaged with this unit performs an attack, before resolving that attack, for each of this unit's destroyed ranks, the attacker suffers 3 hits. When this unit performs a melee attack before rolling attack dice, this attack gains precision and vicious. And then the last ability you can choose from is when this unit is destroyed, one other R'hllor unit in long range may perform 1 attack action. So I love these guys. I think you know, I like that they went down to 6 points. At 7 points, it was hard to really justify them a lot because, you know, 7 points, you know, it's a lot to invest, especially if you want to run, like, all R'hllor units. I was happy to kind of see these guys come down. To be totally honest, though, I would love to see these guys come down even further to 5 points. I would just love for the R'hllor faction to have, you know, a cheap 5-point unit. You know, you'd probably have to change some of their profiles because I think they'd be way too good at 6 points, at 5 points as is, but still, you know, I do love the direction they went in with the 6 points. Now at 6 points, do I think they're amazing? No, I think they're just good. I think they serve their purpose, especially when you can combo in with that free attack when they die. Usually like a Lightbringer unit to get a ranged attack is really nice. But these guys, definitely, I think, got way better. With that said, Justin, we'll jump over to you first for this one. What do you think about these guys?
I thought it was really interesting that they dropped down to 6 points. It gives them kind of a unique situation for the Baratheons. Their only other are the Lightbringers 6 points? I don't remember. Well, anyways, as far as like battle line stuff goes, it's their only other 6 point besides Sentinel. And while Sentinels are pretty good, they've always had this grudging spot for a lot in the community where there's so many times that they just die before they do anything. And that's not, it changed a little, but overall it's not changing terribly too much. These guys are kind of scary in the regard that they're 6 points too. They only hit on fours, but if you make the mistake when they're down to one rank and have a heart of attacking them, you could suffer so much. Six hits before you attack is crazy and can be devastating. As far as their attack goes with the other heart piece, it's good, I guess. I mean, it's kind of hard to balance a 6 point unit, I think, right now. 5 point units, we generally assume that they're going to hit on fours. 7 point units, we generally assume they're going to hit on threes now. 6 point unit, don't really know what they should be doing, because hitting on fours can be kind of rough, but when you hit on fours with precision and vicious, it's a little better. But if you don't have a bunch of hearts or fate tokens, then it could be a problem, because you definitely want to hold out a token for the destroyed ranks hits, because that's also kind of defensive in two ways. It could take ranks off your enemy, but also it's kind of a deterrent. Oh no, I don't want to attack this perfectly good to attack unit because I'm going to hit myself six times. It's going to be terribly. Yeah, that makes sense. It's going to be terribly. And having four morale also aids in their defensive nature. So I think at 6 points, I like them a lot at 6 points. I think they fit probably a good role. It's just going to be interesting how they get used. I think it's definitely something that you have to really look at who you're using to make them most effective.
Yeah, and I think, like you kind of said, you know, they are great at 6 points with their stats. Only reason I suggest 5 points is, it'd be nice to have, like, a cheap 5 point R'hllor unit that you can kind of help to fit in all R'hllor units, since, you know, this one's six, but then you have three more that are all seven. And so it gets really, three. I'm counting the Kingsmen. They're not R'hllor, but the other two R'hllor units, the Queensmen and the Bringers, both being 7 points, it's hard to get a lot of that all in there and still have, like, let's say five combat units on the field. And all be R'hllor. I'd also, you know, as we'll notice as we go over the other ones, I would have liked to have seen both of the other R'hllor units have the R'hllor, token, like the faith token, whatever you want to call it, mechanic, the same way that, the poor fellows and the warrior sons both have their faith token mechanic. It would have been nice to see something else, because unless we see something in the future for R'hllor, this is the only unit that even uses this token. And I don't know, it just seems kind of, I don't know what the right word is. It just seems weird that you have the R'hllor faithful with a fort morale and this faith, like, mechanic token. And then you have these other two R'hllor units, both with only six up morales and no, like, faith token mechanic. I just personally would have liked to have seen maybe the Queensmen and the you know, the Lightbringers, I'm fine at a 6-up. I mean, they're a ranged unit. I don't like seeing ranged units with anything better than that. And then the Ruler Queensmen maybe be a 5-up, you know, still something really great. And then, I don't know, give them both like a faith mechanic thing. Or even just, you know, maybe not even the Lightbringers, because I know technically you could shoot into combat triggering, you know, the morale test on the faithful to give them a faith token, so that can kind of be the synergy there. But at least like the Queensmen, it'd have been kind of cool to see them have a faith token ability. But with that said, we'll jump over to you, Spencer. What do you think about the faithful here?
So if you haven't noticed, David likes to jump to other units before their time. Anyway, I like these guys at 6 points. At 7 points, I struggled to make them into lists because I felt they were just clearly overcosted as a 7-point unit. Now as a 6-point unit, I feel like they're properly costed. I like what they do. Unlike Justin, I actually like the attack bonus for one reason and one reason only. There is a ton of auto-blocking things in this game now. Auto-blocking hits. I roll 1-6, and I don't care anymore. I'm punching through your auto block, and you are taking a vicious panic test. And that is a big deal to me on a 6-point unit. Their other abilities are nice. The 6 hits when I'm on last rank before you attack me has thrown off opponents before. Not just because, like, oh, they didn't know it was coming, but it's more like they're down to 1 rank. Do they really want to take 6 hits before they even attack me? It can definitely change some momentum, and if it's within long range of another lore unit, when it dies, they get a free attack. All good things. This is a good 6-point unit. I actually hate them at right now because I'm painting them, and I hate painting them. I'm painting my second unit of them because I feel most of my list, if I'm running any R'hllor, there's probably 2 of these in a list. They're very good. They're good battle line unit. They can soak up punches pretty good with that 4-up morale. Yeah, the 5-up armor saves means they often take a lot of damage in the attack, but I'm not taking panic damage. And they're one of the few units that we have as Baratheons in general that have good morale and 12 wounds that your opponent has to go through.
Yeah, and you know, that Fort Morale, I'll keep mentioning it because, you know, I played in 1.6, you know, Berserkers, 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 and that's in 1.6, that's what they had. They had a 5-up, 4-up, and people really forget how much the morale can add to the defensiveness of a unit. So a 5-up, 4-up, in my opinion, is, like, right there, like, midline. You know, middle of the road defensiveness overall. You might be taking a little extra on those defensive, you know, on the attacks for the defense, but you're almost never failing that morale. And so, in the grand scheme, you know, this 5-up, 4-up is just as survivable as like a 4-up, 6-up, in my opinion. So, it's definitely something not to take for granted. And, you know, 7-6 in for a 6-point unit, having 7-6 is nice, you know, for the attack. I think that's about average, but it does hurt that they went to a 4-up to hit, but, you know, it is what it is. It'd be nice, you know, you can always have, like, Hours of the Fury to give that +1, and if you're running some Kingsmen to keep getting it back, you can always do it that way, too. Which will kind of segue right into the Kingsmen. So they are a 7-point unit. They are not R'hllor. You know, I know a lot of people kind of get them a little confused because there's R'hllor Queensmen. But yeah, the Kingsmen, 7-point unit. They're a 5-move, a 3-up to hit with 7-6-4, and a 4-up defense, 6-up morale. They have the Order King's Blade. After this unit is attacked, search your tactics deck or discard pile for 1 Hours of the Fury card and add it to your hand. Shuffle your tactics deck. And another order to the last. When this unit would be destroyed, This unit performs one morale test. On a success, it is not destroyed, but remains in play with one wound, then becomes panicked and vulnerable. And then the ability Great Sword, which gives Sundering. So these guys are pretty cool. I love running them with Andrew, Commander, just because Andrew, as having both the crown and the letter, allowing you to trigger all three effects on Hours of the Fury when you're targeting his unit. So to clarify, Andrew lets you count for both those zones for any time you target his unit with an effect. Anyways, so with that said, you know, he combos super well, and it makes sense. He's the, you know, first of the Kingsmen. But one thing we'll kind of talk about with here and over Queensmen next is my kind of problem with To the Last. So I know it's a cool ability. It's cool in theory and in theme, but the fact that you have to take a morale test on a 6 morale unit, so even then if you pass, if you died from the attack dice, you then have to take your panic test, because this was brought up a long time ago with It Shall Not End Until My Death, Jon Snow's 1.6 card, that if you get hit and you die from the attack dice, then you play your card and live, you still have to continue with the order of the attack, which the next step would then to be take your panic test. So you could then still fail your panic test and then die. And then now the fact that you are panicked and you're only a 6-up morale means that the order To the Last is very, very rare that it's ever going to go off. And with that said, because it's an ability that's just kind of there for, I guess, like fluff, you know, it kind of takes away the fact that these guys are, I don't think, a 7-point unit for that reason. It's way too easy, in my opinion. I think out of all of Minus Spencer's games, it's only ever worked once, where, like, after everything was said and done, they actually lived. And then they just proceeded then die to the next time they got attacked. Now, if it was just simply an order where you didn't have to perform a morale test and you just simply did the order and auto-lived with one wound and then became panicked and vulnerable, that'd be fine. I mean, attacking something twice in a round, they have one wound and they're panicked and vulnerable. I mean, one more attack should just immediately auto-kill them. You know, they're only a 4-up save. So I could easily see this just being, you know, straight up, you know, when you're destroyed, survive with one wound. You know, just take that morale test part out of there. But, like I said, overall, I'd rather see the ability taken away on both units and replace with something else. I personally don't like To the Last on any unit. That's with Great John Umber for Starks and for Corrin Halfhand for Night's Watch. I just would like to kind of see the ability not be a thing, because it's too situational. There's too many times where it just never ends up doing anything, or it's more so one of those kind of feel bads. Like, either it doesn't work and then you're like, why in the world do I have this ability? Or it works and, you know, it really just kind of, you know, throws such a big wrench into the plans of your opponent that now the game, you know, they're unhappy because the entirety of the game could be changed at that point just because of that one thing. But with that said, you know, overall, I think if this was just replaced to something else, these guys are great. You know, I love their models. I think they're among some of the best models in the game. I absolutely love most of their poses and the way they look. Justin, we'll jump over to you first. What do you think about these guys?
So I can totally agree that both them and Queensmen are gorgeous. Man, they really, like, go an extra mile in these Baratheon units. I love it. I wish I played Baratheons more, but I can't get away from neutrals. I can't do it. I don't know why. yeah, so this is a unit that looks really good on paper, because that To the Last, like, in your head, you're like, oh, man, how many times has John screwed me? I'm going to do it too. And it doesn't really work. And their point cost, like, they got a decent attack profile, you know, like 7 dice hitting on 3s and thunder. That's cool for 4 defense, nothing to complain about. But at 7 points, they're going to lose half their dudes in the first attack. Luckily, they only lose 1 attack. I mean, if you're lucky, I suppose. Getting as of the Fury is very nice, but also isn't, like, nice enough to really justify their point value, I think. So I don't know. I know I've heard Spencer talk about it to me. I've never had the opportunity to play them on the table. I feel like, I don't know. There seems to be a few units that don't work well with how the game's designed, and this is probably one of them. They lose too much when they get attacked, and then they're worth half their value, and Baratheons are a slow faction. More often than not, they're not going to get the first attack in. That can be a real hindrance. That's
Spencer,
all I got to say.
What do you think about these guys?
So, I've been playing these guys a lot lately, actually. They are complicated. As David pointed out, to the last is actually very hard to pull off in-game. I've had very little success with Till the Last itself. That being said, lately I've actually been having a lot of success with these guys. What I do, or the things I've done to kind of change the mindset that I had, because originally I was just like David and Justin, where I'm like, this unit is not a 7-point unit. My mindset's been changing on them lately the more and more I play with them. And the reason for it is kind of twofold. One, I don't even care about to the last. I really don't. I almost act like I don't even have it. I will still attempt it when a unit dies, but I don't count on it. I'm not counting on it. It's too unreliable. What I have done, though, is I've been a little more careful with them and kind of being more selective with what they're going to fight in deployment phase and with my maneuvering and, you know, movements to kind of make it where you go, well, of course they should win. They're facing sworn swords or something. Yeah, but they can chew through sworn swords pretty quickly and then move on and double team with another unit against something else. Get flank charges, that type of stuff. And I've used them to pretty good success. The second thing I did that kind of changed my mindset originally. So what I did is I'm running 2 at a time now. I run 2 in a list. So when I ran only 1, I ran into the problem of my opponent would be able to target them and they would go all in on them in 1 turn. So it's like, great, they died. Like Justin pointed out, they don't have great defense. Not really. A 4-up, 6-up is just average. They would die basically in 1 round of the turn. It's like, congratulations, I got 1 Ars of the Fury for this unit. With 2, though, you can still blow away 1 of my units, but you're probably out of position and the other unit is still around. And it has made a large difference to be like, you still have to deal with a second unit of these. Is it 7 points worth? I don't know. I mean, that's 14 points of my army that I've invested in 2 of these. But I've also had it where that second unit lives around, and I've won games because a late Ars of the Fury has been pulled from my discard pile. And that Ars of the Fury has given me the win in a game. It's happened more than once. Just 2 seems to kind of be, in my opinion, their sweet spot. It's a heavy points investment, but it has made them worth their points by doing so. I get 1 Ars of the Fury probably from the first one before it dies. Sometimes I'll get a second one before they die. And if my opponent is wary of the second one, because I normally keep them close to each other, if my opponent is wary of the second one getting like a flank charge on their unit, I might not even die. The first one might not even die. And then they linger around and just keep pulling me Ars of the Fury. And them on 2 ranks with Ars of the Fury is still kind of a dangerous unit. And that's just how I've been able to get success out of them. And that's just how I'm using them now. I don't even count that they have to the last because I can't rely on it.
Yeah, which, you know, it's probably the best, you know, best way to go about it, which is kind of unfortunate. Like I said, you know, the ability is so kind of out there of, you know, usefulness, and I understand, you know, it, you know, trying to make it more like thematic, you know, but I don't know. I'd rather just see it change to something else entirely. But yeah, it's, and then you gotta, you know, ask yourself, you know, 6-point Sentinel unit. I believe all of their stats are identical in every way, other than the fact that the Kingsmen hit on threes, and then you're trading essentially King's Blade, and, you know, if you want to count to the last for the Sentinel order. Now, straight up, you know, that 1 point is probably well worth it. But like you were saying, running two units, I almost feel like I would rather run one and one. You know, and then if you put the Sentinels near the King's Guard and they try to come in on the King's Guard, you can get that free maneuver into position for a flank on whatever charge the Kingsmen. But I don't know. I think
if you don't mind me jumping in again.
Yeah.
In my list, I have been running a Sentinel as well that kind of stays near them. So it's like if you fight, try to take on my first Kingsman, you're probably actually dealing with my second Kingsman and a Sentinel unit at the same time.
Gotcha.
And then my other
okay,
two
yeah.
units, I think, in the list are Wardens. So it's like, do you want to go fight Wardens, which are pretty durable, or do you, and let my Kingsmen go and kind of do what they're actually supposed to do, or do you want to deal with those three units all at the same time?
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. And then you run, what, Lieutenants in the Wardens so you can have Sundering on the whole army?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that definitely would be nice then if you still have the Sentinels in there if you're running both Kingsmen. But Sentinels, you know, again, a unit we're not really going to be talking about in depth, but they're definitely a great utility unit for the Baratheons to kind of help out with those scenarios. I can't tell you how useful having that Sentinel in that Sentinel order on the Sentinels in there is to protecting certain units. You kind of have to like out activate the Kings or the Baratheon player in order to hopefully get around that Sentinel order. Jumping over to R'hllor Queensmen, also 7 points. This unit though is a R'hllor unit, moving at a 4, hitting on 3 with a 7-5-4. 3 up defense, 6 up morale. They have the order to the last. Again, kind of the same thoughts on that as with the Kingsmen. And then they have the Queen's Blade. When a friendly R'hllor unit in short range is attacked, before rolling attack dice, search your tactics deck or discard pile for one Baratheon Conviction or one Baratheon Justice card and add it to your hand. Shuffle your tactics deck. So these guys are okay. I mean, they kind of, again, fall into the same thing that the Rose Knights do, that, you know, you're competing with Wardens for 2 points more. And, you know, getting that Tactus card draw is nice, but, you know, you have to be within short of another R'hllor unit to be doing that. You know, the attack profile, 7-5-4, that's kind of the same scenario as the Rose Knights. You take off a rank and, you know, you may be hitting on threes, but five dice, I mean, you're not going to be poking much damage. These guys don't have a keyword. So, I don't know. These guys I find harder to justify, in my opinion, than Rose Knights. What's your thoughts, Spencer? We'll go to you first.
So I've had struggles with this unit as well, and I haven't found a solution like I have with Kingsmen. Again, I can't rely until the last. It is still on a 6 morale unit. As you alluded to already, I thought that this was a prime unit to make a second faith unit for R'hllor. They didn't. Seamon didn't go with that. It's really hard to determine this unit's worth, honestly, because I've had games where I only have one unit of this, and it pulls 4 cards throughout the game. That's actually pretty solid. The problem is both Baratheon Conviction and Baratheon Justice I feel like their best ability of those cards is locked behind a zone. Don't have that zone, the card's just okay at best. It as you kind of alluded to, it's hard to get value out of this unit. I have tried putting like Axel in them to make them a Axel commander to give them a 4-up morale because I feel like that would help. But I'm still not really doing any damage, which is a problem then because now it's a command bunker unit as well. That's 7 points. David and I have discussed before. I feel like 6 points or less is kind of like the perfect spot for a command bunker. If you're 7 points or more, you kind of want it out attacking things and trying to do some damage for your army. This still kind of can do it with its Queen's Blade. You can, if you're sitting on an objective, but still within short range of one or two other R'hllor units, it still can. It's just not as easy to judge. And its attack profile, once it loses the top rank, it isn't that good. Five dice hitting on threes is just meh with no keywords. I want to do more testing with this unit before I kind of be like, oh, it's a bad unit. I don't know if it's bad. I just haven't played with it a whole lot, so it's kind of hard for me to determine. But with Till the Last being so difficult to pull off in-game, it might come out still as a it's not worth it. So it's hard for me to judge.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. Again, another thing I'm going to bring up is the fact that these models look amazing, in my opinion, of, you know, the comparison between them, Wardens, and Rose Knights. They're my favorite of the three. They're just, I love their shields. I love their armor. I think they're amazing models. Justin, what do you think about the Queensmen?
So besides what you guys said, it needs to, at least we pointed out that they are R'hllor. So that's a small advantage there, depending on what you're doing. And then comparing them to Kingsmen, which is probably the closest comparison for the Baratheons, because obvious reasons. The biggest dip, like, it seems they trade getting a really good card for getting the R'hllor keyword. Like, those are the two biggest changes between the two. Because
and the Sundering.
Well, yeah, and Sundering. So this guy, like I was going to say, these guys have like the same attack profile, just minus Sundering, but they do get that plus one defense, and a 3-up goes a long way compared to a 4-up, just like a 2-up goes even longer compared to a 3-up, as I said earlier. But Spencer has a very good point, a 7-point unit. Maybe that's why Rose Knights don't feel like they really like fit a good role, is because a 7-point unit, you want out there murdering something or everything if you're playing Bastard Girls. and these guys aren't going to be murdering everything. They're not even going to catch anything. And when they do, they're going to hit them with 7 dice on threes and nothing else. They can definitely hold the line better than they seem because of Justice and Conviction. But, well, I guess Conviction is mostly just afterwards, but whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I think with testing, they'll probably be okay. I don't think looking at them that they're necessarily a bad unit at all. I think they're going to fill a good spot, but you're going to have to find that spot. And you may not want to. So we'll see.
Yep. And as we kind of discussed, you know, you can't – it feels hard to even justify putting anything in them if it's not a commander. It's like we were saying, there's 7 points. You put any attachment in there, and now you're asking yourself, Stag Knights? You know, because obviously Stag Knights are ridiculously good at 8 points. So, I mean, I know Stag Knights aren't R'hllor, so you might be going away from that R'hllor theme. But yeah, I mean, you at least then are upgrading your morale, you know, from a 6 to a 5 with the Stag Knights, and you can always try to make the Stag Knights R'hllor in some other way. So I don't know. Like Spencer said, I think it's, for us anyways, need a little more testing to kind of give a final solid answer for these guys. But I think
these guys
they're
also,
definitely.
They also, it should be noted that they do lose 2 dice at 2 ranks, which is that actually comparing to Lack of Sundering and that compared to Kingsman and Arts of the Fury, they...
I think it's only one die.
No, it's 7-5-4.
Yeah.
I got it.
So, and the other one's 7-6-4.
Yeah, so I'm saying these guys lose two, the other ones lose one. So it's a significant difference in, like, losing one dice when you lose a rank, you're still hitting at most of your punching power. Losing two dice, which is normal,
is... Oh, I see what you're saying.
You feel the difference and you see the difference. So these guys do have a lot less offensive power than Kingsman with only the plus one save to make up for it.
Yeah, and the minus one move, you know, is a big deal.
Yep.
But yeah, when you said minus two dice, I thought you were saying from second rank to second rank, not from when they drop.
Second rank to second rank, you don't lose anything.
No, I mean from the Kingsmen to
the
Queensmen. But yeah, I agree. I think Kingsmen are, in my opinion, the easy pick. But if you're running R'hllor, then you might really want that R'hllor keyword. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess it gives you more options for your when your faithful die to get some attacks. But, you know, if you're down, if your faithful die, you're more than likely down to, like, two ranks with your Queensmen. And if you're down to two ranks, is a free attack with five dice really, like, all that amazing? I don't know. But... yeah, maybe, it'd be kind of cool if maybe instead of like to the last, they had like intimidating presence or something. I don't know. Something cool like that, especially if you're like shooting into combat with your light bringers and, you know, you can do some extra damage that way. But I don't know. Like I said, we'll have to do more testing with the Queensmen. I'm going to jump over to the last unit we have to talk about, which is the R'hllor Lightbringers for 7 points. They are a ranged unit with a 5 move. They have a ranged attack hitting on threes with 7-6-4 for long range. Their melee attack is a 5-up with 5-4-3. Their defense is a 4, and the morale is a 6. Oddly enough, you know, not the most defensive unit, ranged unit in the game, you know, when you compare Night's Watch. But, I mean, I guess they do have, I think, one better save than the Crossbowmen, Night's Watch Crossbowmen, but they have one worse morale. But they have the Fire Arrows special rule for the ranged attack only, which gives them Vicious. And if the defender fails their panic test, target one other enemy in short range of that unit. They suffer one panic test with a minus two to their roll. Short range. I thought I remember that being long range. Oh, well. Let's see. So, overall, I think these guys are great. It's just the only thing is I really wish they were 6 points so that you could run more of them because they're so cool and for no other reason. Like, you know, these guys are just awesome. They're by far my favorite ranged unit, like the way they look in the game. Like, hands down, not even close. These guys are amazing looking. You know, it just goes to lend to the fact that the Baratheon faction have, like, some of the absolute best models in the game. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of subjective, but that's just kind of my take on that. These guys can be amazing. As I was saying, you know, shooting to a unit that some R'hllor faithful are in and give them some more tokens so that they can get more of their effects off, especially because you always want to make sure you have that one last token at least for when they die to trigger a free attack to someone. So, and then that, you know, that asset minus two that bounces within short is nothing to sneeze at. You know, I've seen it go off plenty of times. I've seen that go off more often than I've seen spread fear go off. Yeah, these guys I think are amazing. They're definitely a great value at 7 points. Justin, we'll go with you first with these guys. What are your thoughts?
I mean, they're a pretty simple unit. You shoot people with fire arrows. They're spooky. they've got a great profile. The 4-up save is strange on a ranged unit. and it'll probably help them plenty against other range units. Their morale's fine. You got 7 dice hitting on 3s of the vicious, and then that extra panic test. These guys would be oppressive at 6 points. They would.
No, yeah, they'd have to get weaker.
They would literally rain hell. And I know that was an initial concern for these guys. So I think they're probably pretty balanced. You got to be careful building with them, though, because if you put 2 of these in your army, if you're a person like that, you are – I'm guessing it's going to be a bad day for you. Like, because 14 of your points are sitting in the back hoping that nothing gets to them, but everything's going to get to them. just because so much of your line is now range units. And once they get engaged, I mean, it's still a range unit. Once you're engaged, you're done, you know. Except those really unlucky moments that I've had with range units. But I'm different. Don't ever base things off what happens to me. Not a smart idea. These guys are good. I like them. I think when I first saw them a long time ago, I was really worried. But no, looking at this at 7 points, I'm totally okay with this unit. Even the short range thing, I think is smart. I think it's good. It's a regular panic test of -2, so neither player is feeling like they got the short end of that stick. The attacking player's like, sweet, I did a couple more wounds, and the other player's like, okay, I took like, you know, 2 more wounds. I can take it, but it's still a good ability.
What about you, Spencer? What do you think?
So 2 things. One, I've actually been playing it that the spread thing is long range because I thought it was long range. So that's a reveal for me.
Cheater.
They're not as good as I thought they were. yeah, I thought as a 7-point unit, it was a long range, and I didn't even notice that they're short. So yeah, they spread fear to short range. Good to know for me. That being said, even when I played them with long range, they're actually very complicated. In theory, I see awesome. Just this unit can compete with the Night's Watch crossbows for damage and stuff. They just do it differently. In actuality, I have had struggles with them. The reason being is panic is not guaranteed. Sundering is actually a bankable ability when you compare them to some, you know, the other crossbows or some such. I know they aren't a crossbow, but I'm still just bringing it up. Thundering is bankable. Vicious is not. I've shot at Greyjoys that are not in an Asha bubble, and they make their 9 morale, and they just, it almost feels bad to me that I'm like, great, I didn't really get to, this unit I'm paying for 7 points for isn't doing what it's supposed to do. If your opponent's rolling hot on panic test or brings a panic list that kind of mitigates panic, you know, maybe they have unyieldings and iron resolves, or their army is 5 up morale or better across the board. These guys don't do a whole lot at that point anymore. They kind of need the panic damage, and that's where I've found them to be inconsistent. There are games where I've seen where I've had them wreck an enemy's day, my opponent's day. They do their job. They're spreading panic. Like I said, I thought it was long range. Unfortunately, I've been cheating with them. But first, it was an honest mistake. And 2, it has ruined opponent's day. But I've also had games, like I just said, where I'm playing Greyjoys that don't have Asha bubble, you know, maybe a different commander, and just my opponent is rolling hot and not failing panics. I found them to be inconsistent. That being said, they're still in pretty much every single standard list I have. I have it as a 1-of.
I think, and not only that, but they're an obvious choice usually for an early, like, weakened token, which is nice. You know, you do have whatever that card is, the one that gets rid of Stag's Wit or something. Yeah, that'll get rid of that token if you need it. But if you don't, I mean, I know there's been plenty of games where, you know, I throw a weaken on you, and then what you were saying, you know, not only what you were saying happens where I passed my morale, but I made you, you know, have to reroll, and now you're down to like 2 hits. And it's like, okay, I failed one. Okay, you at least procced that panic test, and then, okay, I passed it. So now you don't get that extra damage from the panic because you're vicious keyword, and then you're also not bouncing that that panic test onto someone else at minus two. So, but unfortunately, I think that's kind of the game with when you run like a panic focused faction like the Rulor theme, or even just Lannisters.
I would jump in and say I agree, except for the fact that most of the other factions like Lannisters or Free Folk, like they have cards that will boost it to where it's like, okay, it's minus five. Good luck passing that morale now. You are going to take this damage.
And that's why I was kind of suggesting with the Queensmen.
Huh?
Yeah, that's why I was
kind of suggesting I'm just saying,
with
like,
the Queensmen.
Yeah.
Having an intimidating presence.
As is, we have one way of getting intimidating presence, and that's with Axel. And Axel's NCU can also boost panic damage, but it can't boost the panic test. So it's like, you're only at minus two. I don't get that, hey, you got to take a test at minus five and plus, D3 plus three damage. You know, we can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, the Lannisters definitely, you know, have a lot easier of a time than any other faction that wants to go panic-based. And the R'hllor faction, sub-faction, really needs to play around with that. And even when they do, it's definitely nowhere near as optimized as the Lannisters. You would have to do whatever you could, you know, like you were saying, run Axel for the intimidating presence, and then maybe run a unit of Flaydmen for their intimidating presence. And just, you know, you really would have to invest a lot to try to get that. And then the more you invest into a lot of that, like Flaydmen, now you're running less R'hllor units. It's just, yeah, like I was saying, Queensmen with intimidating presence would be amazing. Or even, I don't know, give intimidating presence to, like, Faithful or something. Or just come out with a whole nother R'hllor unit, and they have intimidating. Just something that, like you were saying, help compound that that panic to help make sure that it fails. With that said, I think we can kind of jump over to a couple NCUs before we end the show. Try to squeak some in there. That way to lighten the load a little bit for the next show. First up, we're going to talk about Melisandre, the Red Woman. She has sacrifices to the Lord of the Light. She's an influence. When she claims the zone, attach this card to a combat unit until the end of the round. When Mel influences a friendly unit, you may have them suffer two wounds and one panic test. If you do, target one enemy combat unit. That enemy suffers one panic test with minus two to their roll and plus two wounds on failure. When influencing a friendly unit, that unit is a R'hllor unit and its melee attacks gain vicious. She is, correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer, she's 6 points.
Unfortunately.
So, I'm going to say it right now. I think she'd be a really great purchase at five, because, you know, you're dealing yourself to, you know, when everything is said and done, unless you have like intimidating presence affecting the unit, you're only winning by D3. You know, you're taking two, they're taking two. You're both taking a panic test. So even like if you fail your panic test and they fail theirs, you could roll a three on yours and then they roll a one on theirs and you could take more damage than you actually deal. So I would almost say that I know they wanted her to be a 6-point unit. They wanted more 6-point units out there, but I just feel like this ability as is has a lot of potential. It has a lot of combos, a lot of cool things you can do with it. I think she's more in the category of 5 points, though, with this. I do like that they toned it down from what it was. I know, what, only by one, and you no longer get to choose one through three. But I do like that they toned it down at least a little bit. Not only that, it essentially toned down by two now that panic is only D3. So the fact that you can only ever take a max of five with her, and that's if you fail, as either player, yours or hers, or sorry, yours or the enemy. It is nice that she gains the, she gives the vicious out and the roar keyword out. Definitely makes her, I think, like I said, 5 points, so she'd be spot on. But at six, I don't know. Spencer, we'll go to you first. What do you think of Mel here?
So I think in my testing with her, I have consistently done more damage to myself with her than to my opponent. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, and I really don't like that she causes a panic test on me, because that opens up opportunities for my opponent to play with it. Hear me roar. The free folk, there's too many. Oh, the unit I want to put it on has is engaged with a unit with intimidating presence. I don't like that my opponent can play with it. And then all the damage from her is hoping my opponent fails their panic test. It's very, again, another unit that's inconsistent, and it's 6 points. It's just, it's not optimal. We have only one unit. Well, we have multiple, but Stag Knights have a 5-up. The Faithful are the obvious choice at a 4-up. Dragonstone Noble, which I've mentioned before, this is a combo I have done where once per game, you basically put her on a Stag Knight Noble and just let him go nuts then. Those are the only things that I have better than a 6-up morale in our army. That makes her somewhat inconsistent to not hurt me more than the 2 wounds. And that's not including my opponent doing their, you know, something to make it worse. She has problems. I don't like that she doesn't give a bonus, honestly, to if she is trying to influence a R'hllor unit. I would actually like to see that, where if she tries to influence a unit that was already R'hllor, it auto-passes the panic test or something, just as an idea. Something like that to give her a bonus if the unit already was R'hllor.
You'd have to word it kind of funny
At the start of the turn if they were R'hllor. So this way it's not before her, it's before her influence.
Yeah.
Something like that to make it where it's like, okay, she can mitigate some of the problems. I hate to say it, but the other thing I would like to see if she's going to stay at 6 points is she auto does 2 wounds. So it becomes, I take 2 wounds in a panic test. My opponent takes 2 wounds and a panic test at -2, no additional damage, though. It's just, I'm guaranteed to trade 2 wounds from me to you, but I get to pick where they're coming from because it's my effect. This is a 6-point NCU.
I think that could be a little too strong because you could snipe solos with it.
Damn it. It's very frustrating when I even just take 2 wounds and my opponent does nothing, and I'm like, I spent 6 points for this.
I would say maybe just she can't target solos or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
I could see
something like that.
Just infantry or cavalry?
Maybe.
Yep.
I mean, I'm okay with something like that even. It's very frustrating when it's like, I took 2 wounds, my panic passed their panic test, and it's like, I took 2 wounds on a 6-point NCU. And that was the end of the effect for this round. But then you look at someone like Corrin and... Oh, yeah, and Vicious. Great. You do realize if I'm putting on a R'hllor unit, it already has probably Vicious, except for Queensman. Anyway. It's frustrating. And when I look at the other 6-point NCUs, I just go, those are game-changing 6-point NCUs. This doesn't feel like one unless my opponent's failing lots of panic tests.
And even then, like I said, you're only trading D3, and that's if you don't fail yours.
Is 3 extra. That's not a lot. That's never going to be game-changing. That's throughout the whole game, best case scenario, you got 18 points out of a, or 18 wounds, 18 points, 18 wounds out of a 6-point NCU. That's best.
This is hoping you're not against like Greyjoys who are just like, I'll just heal that all back in one activation. We're good.
I mean, anyone can heal that all back in one activation with the board. Like, that's the most they're doing. Those three extra that you didn't take.
Yeah, it pigeonholes you into using Mel onto the money or waiting to use her until someone has to take the wealth zone. And then, like you were saying, Spencer, influencing the obvious choice is to influence her onto Rule or Faithful, but you give the keyword vicious, and they're already going to be getting vicious and precision. So if you use one of their tokens. Now you could say, okay, you don't have to use a token now, but then you also don't get that precision, which, as you mentioned, is actually a pretty big deal to make that vicious go through. So, yeah, I'd say if you made her 5 points, she's probably way more fair. I wouldn't say she's like some auto take at 5 points. I just think she'd be a lot more justifiable. But, yeah, I've always kind of said this since kind of the beginning when we realized she was a problem in 1.6, is that I'd just rather see her be some big buff. You know, no damage, no panic, whatever, on the enemy. Just literally like some straight up like cool buff, kind of like the Long Night in the show where, you know, she turns like what, thousands of Dothraki swords into flaming swords. You know, if she can do something like that, then, you know, she should just have some really awesome influence ability to buff someone, and just take away that whole, you know, panic part. You could even be like, okay, while influencing a unit, they gain vicious, intimidating presence and +2 to like stalwart. You know, that way, you know, now you're making your unit amazingly good with morale while also amazingly good at minusing morale. And make them a ruler unit still, you know, if they weren't already one. But I don't know. I feel like she still has a lot of work to be done, especially for such like an iconic part of the R'hllor sub-faction. I know you kind of chimed in a little bit, Justin, but what are your overall thoughts of her?
I think so. Before, I hated going against her, except if I knew I could kind of get things to mitigate her damage. Now, if she were 5 points, I wouldn't even, like, there would be no part of me that would be like, oh, no. I'd be like, all right, like, I can deal with this. This is, her ability is plenty manageable. It is more than manageable. I'm going to say it a little more frankly, it in no way justifies 6 points at all, in my opinion. She's not 6 points. I'm not going to, she's not even close. D3 trade is pathetic. Like one wound is probably what I'd get out of her, and that would suck. I'd be super annoyed. So I see her being used such a small amount, like, less so than Jakanakar was in 1.6. And see you.
Yeah, and so to kind of end before we go to one more NCU before ending the show, the last thing I want to mention about Mel is that she is definitely a step in the right direction, like compared to 1.6. Like 1.6, she was so oppressive. She was so horrible to face. I expected to face her in tournaments, but in friendly games, when I saw her, it just kind of made me mad. It's like she was just so oppressive, and this is definitely a step in the right direction. Like you said, Justin, it's way more manageable. It's definitely not ever a feels bad for your opponent.
Yeah,
and
it
just comes down to whether or not it's a feels bad for the person that took her. But like I said, if you want to just avoid the whole the power problem with her, just make her some crazy cool influence that's all revolved around morale, both positive and negative. Then you don't even have to worry about the strength of this one-shotting panic stuff. Now, I understand wanting to have that ability to force a panic test, but when you think about it, really, it's just you know, for the most part, it's just the faithful that want to be getting panic tokens that way. But when you have Lightbringers, you know, it's really not a problem. Like, is forcing a panic test for 6 points really even worth it? I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I would just rather change her to an influence with all those buffs and whatnot for the panic stuff, and then the, still give the reward on a non-reward unit. And I think she's golden, and she's way easier to balance at that point. You don't have to worry about the potential of her, you know, killing things all by herself. With that said, we're going to jump over and talk about Olenna last and the show there. So we have Olenna Tyrell. Correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer. She is 5 points?
She's five.
She is five.
Okay, she has the ability Pulling Weeds. Each time Olenna claims a zone, target one enemy NCU and choose one. That NCU claims all, or claims that NCU loses all abilities until the end of the round. If that NCU, or you can choose, if that NCU claims a zone this round before resolving that zone's effect, target one enemy combat unit. They suffer D3 hits and become weakened. So, way better than what she used to be, in my opinion. She is definitely a strong 5-point unit, or 5-point NCU, and she's super, in my opinion, versatile with these two different options. Justin, I know you got to get going, so we'll go over to you first with your opinion about her.
Yeah, so in 1.6, I thought she was fine, but I also felt like there were going to be situations where paying 5 points for kind of nothing, because you traded her ability for their ability, so really you're just paying 5 points to claim the zone at that point and making your opponent just claim a zone. And I do understand there were times where you're shutting off a more powerful NCU, so it was really cool, but there weren't any more powerful NCUs point-wise, so it didn't seem efficient to me. But with that being said, I didn't think she was, like, terrible or nothing. I thought she had a good place. Now, it's the exact same thing, but better. But it's not the extra part isn't something that's in, like, game changing. And your opponent has the option to not let it happen. They cannot claim a zone. That's kind of wild and probably not going to happen, but it could be something important. Could be that all that's left is the crown and you don't want to take a panic test and they don't want to take D3 hits and become weakened. So boom, you're good to go. That worked out great for everybody. Yeah, she's, I like her. I think she's really good this way. And with a lot of things going up to five, she also kind of slips into this normalized role.
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out before I go to you, over to you, Spencer, is that I think that she is going to be a key element in a lot of Baratheon's competitive lists, because the ability to, if you're going first that round, to claim a zone and then, let's say, target Tywin, NCU, and they lose all their abilities, and that is the round that they needed to Reigns Castamere for the win, or Corrin Halfhand sacrifice himself to prevent a unit from doing its thing. I mean, she can be just as clutch, and she could be, you know, I would almost argue, because in my experience, most games competitively end turn five or round five. So, you know, you could even go into the game with the mindset of, okay, I'm going to go first, ensuring that I go first round five, barring, you know, you don't have, like, Walder in there or something, and, you know, really help ensure that you're going to be able to pull off this this ability to stop this, you know, this key moment. Now, Tywin has a little more play because, you know, he'll capitalize when he wants to capitalize, but you can really try to prevent that last round, you know, key thing from happening. Especially, like I said, like we were talking about with the Night's Watch episode is, you know, Corrin, even though he's 6 points, you take advantage of his influence all game. And then just the last round or the round that you know is going to be the last before the game ends, you just sacrifice him. Because now you've gotten his influence all game, and now you're trading your NCU only for one round's worth for their key unit that needs to do something to win the game. But if you can plan it out just right where you're going to go first. You can Olenna onto a zone and turn them off so that they can't do that. Spencer, what's your opinion of her?
So I really like her. I definitely think because so many NCUs went up in cost, she has gained far more value. I do agree. I think you'll see her in at least one competitive list if you're specifically if you love Renly. Like, she's the obvious choice to have at least in one list. My only concern is her second thing, the D3 hits and weaken. I honestly really wish it was just a flat 3. I feel like for a 5-point NCU, it kind of needed to be a little stronger for that cost because it is only hits. It's like, my opponent is going to get saves against this. Or even just 2, a flat 2. I don't like that. It's like my 5-point NCU did a weaken and 1 hit. doesn't feel great because it's happened to me. For 5 points.
Or even like one for every rank they have. You know, that
something.
Way you can't just like snipe solos with it.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with something like that. It's just, it's like, great, my 5-point NCU. I you know, maybe the NCU I would like to shut off activated first because they went first. And then it's like, okay, I'll do her other thing on the other NCU because why not? I've literally had it do 1 hit in a weekend and I'm like, that didn't feel like 5 points, but okay. I think she's good. I think you will see her in competitive play as the game, as Baratheon stand right now.
Yeah, you brought up a great point. You know, the fact that so many things now are 5 points or 6 points for NCUs, she'll be key, I think, in you know, at least one of the two lists in a tournament format. You know, there's going to be such strong NCUs that her, and then we'll talk about him in the next show, but Courtney, Penrose, you know, running both of them, you know, you just add so much level of control on the board and with against your opponent's NCUs that it really, you know, kind of helps you control that aspect of the game. But with that said, we're going to close out there. Didn't go as far as I would have liked. You know, there's still a handful of NCUs I would have loved to have gone through. But, you know, there's definitely a lot to talk about with this faction. Really hoping that we don't have to do a fourth episode of this to get it all in. But definitely do our best, you know, in the next episode to kind of get through a lot of the attachments. Because the goal for the next show is finish up the NCUs, do the attachments, and talk about 2 of the commanders. You know, and we're going to talk about the non-starter box, Renly and Stannis. I always forget. I think it's One True King and Lord of the Stormlands or something.
Lord Paramount of the Stormlands.
Lord. Okay, yeah. So, you know, that's where we're going to end. I want to thank my co-hosts for coming on. Thank you so much, Justin and Spencer. You know, definitely couldn't do this without you guys. You know, definitely nice to get some other perspectives on each topic. But with that said, I want to make one last statement, and that's, Lord Paramount of the Stormlands is not actually Renly. They might trick you and say it's Renly, but it's actually Loras's brother. That's why he
Garland.
Has his helmet on. Yep. So any of you guys that want to play that version of Renly, you're admitting that Renly is dead. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Stannis rules. With that said, I'm going to end the show there. Thank you guys so much for listening. You know, it's all 3 of these are probably going to be a longer show. Like I said, I really want to try to get all of these done in 3. And we definitely want to try to get all of the factions done before they come out and like, oh, we're changed everything before we even finish the series. Cause I know, you know, we definitely want to try to get go through everything for those that are kind of newer, kind of getting back into 2021 finally with things opening up. And then, you know, if we're lucky, maybe Simon's listening in and you know, I know they won't agree with most of what we say, but even if there's like one small thing that they hear and they're like, you know, hey, that's a reasonable change, you know, it's always worth a try, you know. And I, like I've always said, I appreciate CMON. I think they do an amazing job, you know, and, you know, you're never going to get everything perfect right off the get-go. And when things get released into the public, as Michael has mentioned on multiple occasions, you know, the community is going to be able to do way more testing than the testers ever could have. So it's just inevitable. You know, there's just, you know, they could get thousands of games in, but the moment that it's released to the public, you get like tens of thousands within like, you know, like a month or two, between everyone playing games. You know, me and Spencer, we get as much as like, I think we've gotten like 10 games in 1 week, just from playing like 5 games on Friday and then 5 games on Saturday. So if just between us, we're getting 10 games in 1 week, you imagine there's thousands of players across the world. So, I mean, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, CMON isn't perfect, but I know that they have the best, you know, in, you know, they're doing what they believe is best for the game, because they definitely want to see it grow and flourish way more than I think anyone else wants it to be that way, because it's, you know, it's their baby. So with that said, we're going to close it out. Thank you guys for listening in. Stay tuned for the next show, I believe is next Tuesday, because this show was supposed to be on Sunday, but we had to reschedule. Where we talk about part 2. With that, this is the Small Council Radio, and it is dismissed.